Oh, come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
What a end zone punt.
Touchdown, Giants.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live, live from Indianapolis at the 2015 NFL Combine in Indianapolis. It is about -5 degrees outside, but we're warm inside, and we're joined by Rob Rang to start off the program. Rob, of course, is one of the many great draft experts out there. He's from CBS, and Rob, you've been at it the last couple of days. The workouts begin in earnest later on today. As someone that views this whole process as a whole, what are you looking at this weekend that you think is going to have a huge effect when they finally conduct this draft at the end of April?
Well, the biggest thing, John, is that the Combine was created in 1982 to try and give NFL teams an opportunity to do the medical evaluations, the interview process, all that kind of stuff. And that remains the most important element of the Combine at this point. But, of course, that's not what everybody wants to talk about. Everybody wants to talk about the 40-yard dash and the bench press drills. And as you mentioned, those things don't start in earnest until the offensive linemen finish up their, or start their the bench press drills a little bit later today.
All right, well, let's get right to it. I've heard people describe this draft as very deep at a couple different positions. Wide receiver, deep, not quite as explosive as last year in terms of the top-end guys, but then it's supposed to be a very deep running back class and also on the defensive line and those 3-4 hybrid pass rushers.
Exactly. That's really what separates 2015 class from the 2014 group. You know, everybody talked last year about the depth. I mean, Pittsburgh Steelers general manager Kevin Colbert said it was the best that he had seen in 30 years.
Wow.
I mean, so, you know, last year's class was certainly a 5-star group, but this year's group is actually, I would characterize as a 4-star group. It's better than it typically is. There is very good depth at running back in those hybrid pass rushers, as you mentioned, and yet again, another strong wide receiver crop as well.
All right, let's go to the defensive line, because that is probably going to be the most common position you'll hear in the top 10 this year. How many of these defensive linemen and 3-4 pass rushers do you think we're going to see off the board in the top 10 in this year's draft?
I think half of the top 10 is going to be spent on,
wow,
on defensive linemen or those edge rushers. I mean, the three primary edge rushers being Randy Gregory from Nebraska, Shane Ray from Missouri, and Dante Fowler from Florida. And then the two big defensive tackles, Leonard Williams from Southern Cal, who's played defensive tackle. He's also played defensive end. So wherever you want to place him, he is my top-rated prospect in the draft at any position. And then the big guy from University of Washington, Danny Shelton,
yeah,
6'2". 340-pounder. He certainly is a big guy.
Now, you take a look at these guys, and in the college now, there are so many 3-4 defenses, and I think it's getting harder and harder to find those traditional 4-3 defensive ends that can set the edge and get after the quarterback. When you're looking at this class, which you mentioned is very deep and very strong up top, who fits that mold for a 4-3 defensive end that can get the quarterback and stop the run?
Well, there's not many guys that can do both already. I mean, that's the thing. With Nebraska's Randy Gregory is my top-rated defensive end. But at the same time, he was listed at Nebraska at 255, and there's some talk out there that he might actually get measured in around 240 pounds. That's just simply not strong enough to be, you know, a traditional 4-3 defensive end. Even though he plays with very good strength with his upper body, he's got very thin legs, and so there's some concern if he's going to be able to do that. So at this point, the top traditional 4-3 defensive end is actually a guy who didn't play that position very often, and Dante Fowler.
Yeah.
From Florida. He was a player that saw some time at defensive tackle, defensive end, both linebacker positions as well. He has more of that frame that you're looking for. A little bit shorter, 6'3", 265 roughly, but he has the strength throughout his body to be able to hold up at the point of attack, and he's a very effective pass rusher, showing not only speed, but also great hand technique to be able to get off blocks even when he's initially held up.
And in those five guys you think will go in the top 10, do you think Fowler and or Shelton will be there when the Giants pick at 9, or do you think one or both will be off the board already?
I think that one or both could be off the board. I mean, Dante Fowler, the nice thing about him is he's viewed as relatively pro-ready. And so I think that there is a possibility that he is off the board at that spot, number 9. And then with Danny Shelton, because he is so big, so strong, and so incredibly athletic for a man, again, 6'2", 343 pounds, then I think that there's a possibility he's off the board as well. As you mentioned, there's only so many teams anymore in college football who are running that 3-4 defense. There's a lot of clubs in the NFL who are using that 3-4 defense. I think the Chicago Bears might be a team that is looking to get a little bit bigger up front, and they, of course, pick ahead of the Giants, two spots ahead.
Very interesting. Want to talk about Shelton a little bit more because he's a guy I've seen gotten picked by the Giants in a lot of these mock drafts. Mm-hmm. He's large. He's 340. He's a big fella, but he can move too. Do you see him as a guy that can play the three technique, but also play that bigger guy that's the run-stuffing position? Where do you see him fitting in on that 4-3 line?
I'm happy you asked that because that's one of the things about Danny Shelton. When you see that size, at least on paper, you get a certain idea of what he can do. And he's so much more athletic than a traditional 6'2", 340-pounder. I mean, this is not just a Vince Wilfork type of guy who's just going to be able to hold up at the point of attack. He has remarkably light feet and great passion to the edges. I mean, there's plays where you watch him where he'll pursue to the edge. He'll pursue 10 or 20 yards down the field, actually. I've seen him chase down receivers on bubble screens and things like that. He was actually one of the University of Washington's leading tacklers. I mean, you very rarely say that for a man of that size. So he's very intriguing. I think that he projects best, in my opinion, as a 3-4 nose guard. But there's no question in my mind that he's athletic enough and passionate enough to also be productive as a traditional 3 technique in a 4-3 defense.
All right, I want to stick on the defensive side of the ball just for a couple more minutes. You talked about the 3-4 defenses in college football. That means you don't have as many 4-3 edge rushers. You probably also aren't going to have as many traditional 4-3 Mike linebackers that can stick in there, not only play the run on first and second down, but also cover a little bit when you get the third down. Are there any guys coming out in this draft class that you think can be that, I don't want to throw the name out there because no one's Luke Kuechly, but be that 3-down middle linebacker?
There's not a lot of them. For my money, the best traditional 4-3 Mike linebacker in this draft class is Miami's Denzel Perryman. And he's a guy that is instinctive. He's a run plugger. But he also is athletic to be able to drop back into coverage or do things of that nature. Now, there's some guys who are a little bit undersized that might be able to hold up just because the way the NFL is going now, John, we're seeing guys that...
It's a speed game now.
Exactly. It's all about the passing game
anymore. The Kendricks kid out of UCLA, is
exactly.
That what the guy's talking
about? And Kendricks is the player that I would mention, is that he has such terrific speed, such great awareness and pass coverage, and he has ball skills as well. So when the football is in the air, he's not only looking to knock it down, he's actually looking to intercept it and take it back to the house.
And I think as these teams try to fit players into the 4-3 scheme, it's going to get more and more challenging as they move along. Do you think a guy like Perryman would be there when the Giants pick in the front end of that second round? And where do you think Kendricks might drop in this draft?
I think that both of them are likely to go in that top portion of the second round. I think that one of them is likely to be available to New York at the top of the second.
Very interesting. Where do you see the value? And we've talked so much about the top 10. You get to the second round in the top half of that draft. The way this draft is set up in terms of depth at positions, where do you think you're going to start getting players and value when you're picking in that first 10 picks of round number 2?
Well, I think that the way this draft sets up, that there should be extraordinary value at the wide receiver, right tackle, or guard positions, and as well as running back. Now, if both of those linebackers that we just mentioned, Denzel Perryman and Eric Kendricks, are both available, then certainly you're going to have great value at middle linebacker as well. I think it's possible that at least one of those players is off the board. But the running back class is something that really makes this draft class so much better than I think a lot of people realize. And it's starting to get a little bit of publicity about it now, but of course we've gone 2 years in a row now where there hasn't been a running back selected in the first round. That's going to change this year, but it's not just the Todd Gurleys and the Melvin Gordons that make this draft class special.
I love Tevin Coleman.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, whether it be Tevin Coleman, whether it be David Cobb from Minnesota, whether it be another player to keep in mind, David Johnson from University of Northern Iowa.
Yeah, he's a fast riser, right?
Yes, he has extraordinary hands out of the backfield. So because the game is just shifting so much to the passing game, then running backs who not only can catch the ball but also can hold up in pass protection are absolutely critical to success in today's NFL. At 6'1", 230 pounds, Dave Johnson certainly has that.
You mentioned the running backs very quickly. Is there a third down scat back in this draft that you think could fill that type of role that you can get in the middle rounds that can be the guy that can make a big play at any time and fit that type of role?
Well, I don't know that he's going to get to the middle rounds, but my favorite of the scat back types is Amir Abdullah from Nebraska. I mean, the kid can absolutely fly. I wouldn't be surprised at all if he winds up being the fastest running back tested here this week.
Wow.
Has great hands, is a return man as well. So when it comes down to it, Amir Abdullah can do just about anything you need.
Now, you mentioned at the top half of the second round that you could get some good value at right tackle and at guard. And there is some speculation the Giants might try to shore up that offensive line in the draft. Before we get to that area, though, I want to touch on Brandon Scherff, because I've heard a lot of different things about him. Do you, first of all, agree that he's the only top 10 worthy offensive lineman in this draft? And where do you project him? You know, he played left tackle in college. Some people say he's a right tackle. Mike Mayock says, I think he's going to be a guard. Do you agree with the Zach Martin comparison? How do you see Brandon Scherff?
I think Brandon Scherff is one of the safest players in this draft class. He has terrific strength. He uses his hands very well. I mean, he's coming from a program at Iowa, coached by the great Kirk Ferentz, that might just be the best offensive line coach in all of college football. And that's the exciting thing about Brandon Scherff, is he might just be the best that Kirk Ferentz has ever had.
Which is amazing.
It really is. And so, you know, to look at Brandon Scherff, he's not a flashy type of athlete that I think is going to wind up, you know, perhaps earning a top five selection, but I think that he should, because I think that he is that safe. I currently actually have him projected to go to Washington, number 5 overall.
Wow.
And the reason I say that is because I think that Washington is willing to gamble a little bit more on some relatively safe players, they want to find players who are pro ready and not have to screw around a little bit. I mean, they want to get a lot more physical at the point of attack, and that is exactly what Scherff brings. That's why I think that the projection inside to guard is such an easy one for him, because he does play with that physicality. And I do like the comparison to Zach Martin. It's one I've been using for about a year now, is that just because of the fact that I am very confident that Zach Martin could have remained at left tackle as he played for 50 games at Notre Dame, and he'd still be successful. But, you know, obviously the fact that he was voted to All-Pro as a rookie in Dallas, I mean, just speaks to his, his versatility and his toughness. That's the type of player I see with Brandon Scherff as well.
All right, now let's jump to the guys that might be there. We're joined by Rob Ryan from CBS Sports, one of their great draft experts. These guys at guard, it's not really as deep of a class as we saw last year. A.J. Cann's a guy that people think can come in and go right away. But these tackles that people can say, well, you can play right tackle or you can play guard. How do you break down some of these guys that might be there? I'm guessing Collins is going to be off the board by then. He's probably going to be a mid-round pick, and he would probably fit into that category. How do you see these other tackles that you think can make that conversion that will be there at the start of the second round?
Well, the start of the second round, it's going to be interesting, because I think we could see a little bit of a run on offensive linemen towards the tail portion of the first round, because you're talking about clubs, obviously, who are, you know, are playoff contenders. They're looking to kind of continue that, and they generally have the ability to be able to draft a player and give him a little bit of time before he's expected to come in and play immediately. One of the players that I'm very, very high on and think that he should go in the first round, but I don't know that he will, is Miami's Eric Flowers. And he's a guy that played left tackle while at Miami. I think he's one of the very few in this draft class who projects to remain at left tackle in the NFL. But at the same time, I have such great confidence in his strength, his length, and his consistency while at Miami that certainly any NFL club that drafted him, if they wanted to play him at right tackle or guard, because of his physicality, that he could handle that transition. Another player I'm very high on, Colorado State's Ty Sambrello. I would be surprised to see him make the late portion of the first round. I think so he should be available at the top of the second, but also a very intriguing athlete. Got a chance to watch him up close and personal at the Senior Bowl. Was very impressed by his versatility. Line up at left tackle, right tackle. His length and his light feet allow him to be successful regardless. But I like him specifically as a tackle, not moving inside, just because I don't know that he has that physicality that you're looking for in the trenches.
How about Cameron Irvin? You mentioned a guy that's versatile, and he basically fits that description to a T. Played tackle at Florida State. A lot of people think he's going to be a center. Could NFL teams even entertain playing him at guard?
I think they could. I mean, Cameron Irvin, he's the Swiss Army knife for the offensive line this year. I mean, because he can do just about anything you need. I mean, he actually played defensive tackle originally at Florida State, made the switch to left tackle, was the ACC Jacobs Blocker Trophy winner as the best offensive lineman in the conference as a junior at left tackle. Made the switch to center, as you mentioned, and won the ACC blocking trophy again, you know, at center. Then at the Senior Bowl, I mean, showed off that versatility again. So he is a guy that, regardless of where you need help on the offensive line, that I believe that he can fit in. He is still a little bit rough around the edges because he has moved positions so much, but he is exactly the type of athlete that I think the NFL offensive line coaches are going to love. And the best thing about him is that his best future, or his best football, is still ahead of him.
I want to touch on the tight end position very quickly. Max Williams seems to be the consensus number one guy. Where do you think he's going to go, and who else besides him do you see sticking out in this tight end class that could qualify as a two-way tight end that can catch and block?
That's the thing. There's not very many of those guys in this draft. I mean, Max Williams, in my mind, is heads and shoulders above the rest of the tight ends in this group, which is hard to imagine considering he's a redshirt sophomore coming out of Minnesota. A program isn't necessarily known for producing, you know, hordes of NFL prospects. But he's a very interesting player. I mean, 6'5", 245 pounds. He's a guy that is physical enough at the point of attack to be that run blocker. He also has very soft hands and good athletic ability. We saw him with a leaping catch and touchdown run in the bowl game. So he is a player that I think is going to wind up going in the late portion of the first round. I think that he would make some sense with Denver, with Seattle, some of these other teams that need a little bit of help down the seam. And then after that, again, the position weakens out, but a player that I'm very intrigued by is Penn State's Jesse James. It's not just because of the cool name, you know, but he plays with a little bit of an outlaw type of mentality. He's a more physical blocker than you might expect, and, you know, at 6'7", he certainly has the height to be a red zone target as well.
All right, Rob, finally, I realize this is silly, and I understand that before I ask the question, but pre-combine workout, who do you have at number 9 for Big Blue right now?
Well, at this point, actually, I have Shane Ray, the pass rusher from Missouri. He's the most explosive edge rusher in this draft, in my opinion, and that's one of the reasons I think that his ability to come in and be able to make an immediate impact makes a great deal of sense for the New York Giants.
I'll tell you what, Steve Spagnuolo, love that little tool in his tool shed as he tries to rush the passer next year. Rob, great stuff. Appreciate the time, my friend. Always great. Enjoy the rest of the week here in Indianapolis.
Thank you for having me.
That's Rob Rang from CBS Sports. We thank him for joining us as we continue with Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. We'll start to take your calls at 201-939-4513. And today we're also having a very special hashtag. It's not hashtag Giants Chat like we usually play with on Twitter. It's hashtag NYG Combine. So we'll take your calls at 201-939-4513, and we will now go to the phone calls and say what's up to Christian in Long Island first. Christian, what's going on, pal? How are you? Hey, what's up, Christian? How are you, man?
All right. Been a while since I called in. Used to be consistent. I'm trying to get back to that.
That's right, bud. What's going on?
Changes up. I have a few questions, if you don't mind. I know, you know, last year we had the whole injury concern with David Wilson. Reese said that he's going to operate as if Wilson's not going to be available.
Yes, sir.
And he also mentioned the same thing with Victor Cruz. Now, do you think that we attack that position with another slot receiver to fill that? Or, I mean, we obviously have Jernigan as insurance, or do you think we go for a big-bodied type wide receiver?
I think you do need to get some type of insurance for Victor Cruz because of his injury. I don't think you can simply say he's going to be healthy and let's rock and roll. But I don't think you go out there and bring in another, you know, first-round, top-10 type of guy, a guy you're going to give big money to in free agency. I think you get a guy that can do okay, and then you kind of go from there as you determine how healthy Victor Cruz is going to be moving forward, Christian.
Okay. Now, I know he really doesn't – well, he's not projected to fit our scheme. But, I mean, I watched a lot of Clemson. What do you think of Vic Beasley and if he could, you know, project to fit in our scheme?
Yeah, you know what? I'm not sure if he can be a 4-3 defensive end, and that's the trick. And I thought it was interesting that Rob had Shane Ray going to the Giants at 9 because I think he kind of fits into that same area. I think he's a guy who's a great third-down pass rusher, but you have to see if he can figure out a way to be an every-down defensive end. Christian, we appreciate the call, man. Thanks so much.
All right,
now we welcome in our next guest on the program, and that is the fantastic and lovely Kim Jones from the NFL Network. Kim, it's good to see you. How
it's
are you?
Kim in New Jersey calling. How are you?
I'm doing great, Kim. How was the combine experience treating you so far?
It is very cold.
And
it's
we also,
fun.
And we made sure we positioned you right in front of the
you
doors
did?
That opened, by the way.
That's awesome.
Said you'll get a nice cold breeze in the
it's
middle
awesome.
Of the show.
My hands froze last night on the way back to the hotel, and it's not a long walk. So.
I have not been this cold walking outside
ever.
Since
Green
Lambeau
Bay.
In 2008.
I knew you were going to say that, and I wasn't there. So...
That this is as
I can't
cold
even
as
use
been.
That. This and is as cold as I've ever been.
Same story I always have from there, and it happened the other day walking outside. You're outside for about 30 seconds, mm-hmm. and you feel the crystals
yes.
in your nose start to form.
Yes.
That's happened to me two
yes.
times in my
it's
life.
It's a lovely feeling, though.
Yesterday in the afternoon,
crystals
this morning.
In the nose.
Exactly, and then in Green Bay in 2008.
Do you think Pat Hanlon's listening?
I think Pat,
I hope so.
Well, I'm on, so probably not. If he knows that you're on, that's maybe he'll true. Listen to that.
That is not true. So how you doing?
Everything's great. And
I saw you interview Tom Coughlin.
We did.
Course.
And then you chatted with Tom after we were done as well. And we heard Tom speak to the media out there. What were your takeaways from
Tom? Well, it sounds like in Tom's way, because he never wants to make it about himself and the whole contract thing. And he's kind of said to the media, you know, let's not make this complicated. It certainly sounds like a one-year extension is in the offing. And his agent was here in Indianapolis and was seen at least speaking with John Mara. So that would make sense, and that wouldn't be a surprise. And Tom Coughlin's going to be the coach of the New York Giants this season. And as he said, you know, that's the important part is I'm head coach of the Giants and everything else kind of takes care of itself. I'm paraphrasing Coughlin now. But I thought his comments about Jason Pierre-Paul, you know, you let Jason Pierre-Paul go, and you're going to spend the rest of this offseason and the draft trying to find another Jason Pierre-Paul.
And that's JPP, not easy to do.
JPP will be a Giant.
Yes.
I feel like one way or another, he will be a Giant. I truly believe he wants to be a Giant. The comments about Antrell Roll were interesting to me, and they've been consistent that they do want him back at a price. One thing I'm taking from this combine, though, John, is other people I'm talking to about this combine telling me the safety position is not strong.
And a lot of people don't think it's very strong in free agency either.
Right.
Antrell is considered one of the top two or three safeties out there.
Absolutely. And it could be the case that Antrell Roll is more valuable to the Giants than he would be to anyone else.
Great point.
He is incredibly important in that locker room and has been for a long time.
Sure.
Before the departure of some other guys. He was incredibly important to his teammates and with his teammates. So, you know, maybe that I'd love to see him back. He's a good Giant. You'd love to see him retire as a Giant. And continue to contribute and help the Giants get back on the winning track. But I do find it fascinating because before this, I really haven't had a chance to think much about the draft. You know, the combine for many of us starts that line of thinking. And the number of people who've said because of the way the college game is played, the safety position is different. You have safeties playing linebacker. You have linebackers in the down position. In some cases, you need to convert a corner to safety. Well, that guy, by definition, probably is not going to be a physical tackler.
Yeah. And people are talking about converting Shaq Thompson, who was an all-world linebacker in college, to safety in the pros because you have 215-pound linebackers running around in college football these days.
Absolutely, and he could be one that could do it. But from what I'm gathering, if we use the Seattle defense as the model, you can find the Cam Chancellor. It's the Earl Thomas, the Ed Reed, if you will.
The guys in coverage, the play center field.
That's so hard to find because they're going to the two safety. I mean, you know this.
Yeah.
That the way the college game is played now is squirrely compared to the way the NFL plays football. You know, so it is interesting to me, and I do wonder if that does factor in when we ultimately look at Antrell Roll's decision.
Yeah.
And what is the best option for him and what obviously he chooses to do.
And I think the other interesting thing, too, is that it's not just Antrell Roll. You got to figure out who your second starting safety is as well. You know, if Nat Burhey, you hope he can develop and take over that role, but nobody knows for sure. He hasn't done it yet.
Right.
Cooper Taylor's battled injuries for 2 years.
Yeah.
So if, for whatever reason, Roll does not end up returning, that's two big holes that you have to find there. And if you remember back when Steve Spagnuolo was with the Giants, he liked having that veteran safety to lead and set that secondary.
James Butler
played that way extremely well. So safety is going to be a big issue, I think, for the Giants as free agency begins in a few weeks.
Yeah, and you have those corners. You got to have safeties who can hold up their end of the bargain because healthy, the Giants secondary absolutely should be a strength. It should have been a strength last season.
I thought it was one of the strongest units in the league.
And it was strong, but
then they drop like flies.
Decimated by injury from the get-go, right.
Absolutely, absolutely. When talking to people here, and you're starting to now get into this draft process, you talked about safety. The other position that I see, Kim, where the college game is dictating where NFL teams can go is middle linebacker. You don't have those big traditional middle linebackers coming out anymore that can play the 4-3 or, frankly, the 4-3 defensive end. You got a bunch of hybrid pass rushers that are a lot of times too small to play 4-3 defensive end. It's very interesting.
It is a good point. The linebacker in and of itself is just fascinating to me. Just as a Penn Stater linebacker, and I know I'm going back decades, but I do go back decades, you know, I've just always loved the position, and it has evolved a lot. And I think you see with Devon Kennard, the kind of player that you can build around. You'll cross your fingers if you're the New York Giants that John Beeson can stay healthy. He has not been able to, as we know, but he could be very important to them. But to me, Kennard obviously gives you a building block there, but clearly you need to have other guys stay healthy or other guys come aboard, you know, to really you know, flesh out that position. I operate under the assumption Jason Pierre-Paul will be back. So when you look at the defensive line, and this is a strong draft for defensive linemen, the Giants love taking defensive linemen. A coach joked to me yesterday that when the Giants took Jason Pierre-Paul, he was in his room yelling, they're going to take Pierre-Paul. And everyone in his room said, they don't need a defensive lineman. And then, of course, the Giants drafted JPP in the first round. So the Giants, as everyone knows, love to draft defensive linemen, and this is a good draft for that as well.
Now, this is a big weekend, not just the draft, but also the business of the NFL. A lot of stuff going on behind the scenes. What's your feel here for how this free agent process is going to go this year? You know, the salary cap's going to go up again as more TV money gets injected into the league. Is this going to be a buyer's market? Is it going to be a seller's market? Is it going to move quickly? What's the feel now among NFL executives of how free agency is going to play out?
You know, it's always it has evolved the last couple years into the haves and have-nots. And the big guys go off the board relatively quickly.
Yeah.
And then a whole lot of players are looking for jobs. You know, that middle class, if you will, of the NFL player these days because of the way the CBA is constructed this year. Now, that's changing a little bit, as you noted, that the salary cap goes up a little bit, you know, more than maybe we expected, as it always does. But and the TV money will change it in the coming years. But for now, if you're a 32-year-old, you know, decent player in this league, you know, it's a tough go in terms of a nice deal that you were hoping to get, say, a few years ago at that age. You're looking more at the veteran minimum or a very short deal that's very friendly to get rid of you, you know, in year two or certainly by year three. So I think it's hard to say. I do think that teams will be aggressive, as they always are, with the player they want and the player that they need. For the Giants, you know, when you have the number 9 pick, that's like a big free agency
acquisition. No question about it.
Because you know you can get probably your guy, and if not your guy, in all caps, your guy in lowercase at number 9. They're going to be able to do that. So, you know, you don't want to pick in the top 10. We all know that. But that's the advantage they'll have this year.
And the other benefit the Giants have too, Kim, is that they're almost getting a free agent offensive lineman in Jeff Schwartz, because he was their big signing last year. He played half a game before he went down with that ankle injury. When do you expect him to be back from that injury? Are you hearing anything? But the expectation should be that he's going to step in next year and be a big part of this offensive line, get back to where it needs to be.
Well, let's put it this way. If he doesn't, it's a tremendous disappointment.
Yes.
Because it's one thing when you have two serious injuries last year, which he did.
The foot and the ankle, the toe and the ankle.
Right, the toe and then he injures the ankle. If you follow him on Twitter, though, he gives updates. I mean, I think it does sound like he's feeling pretty good and everything else.
He's actually a one-man news feed on Twitter.
He is. He's entertaining, though.
He is.
But it does sound like – but listen, he has to factor in to this offensive line being a dominating presence and being able to block, run block, and you know, pass block even better. Now, they were better pass blocking, but they've got to be able to run the ball, and they have to be able to, you know, be a physical presence. You heard Tom Coughlin, and I thought this was one of the more underrated things he said in his season-ending press conference when he talked about wanting to be stronger and more physical up front. And he wants guys to be bigger. And you think of a Weston Richburg, who now that he's gone through an NFL season, he'll come back bigger and presumably at his natural position of center.
And he is like that blue-collar guy that has that nasty streak, you know, that Richie Seibert feel to him.
But probably does need to put on a little bit of weight. And Tom Coughlin likes big linemen. We know that about Tom.
Pugh can put on some weight, too, to be honest with you.
Pugh, you know, we all know, took the step back as a sophomore as opposed to his rookie season. But, you know, I think they all took a step back, and there wasn't the consistency that they hoped for. So do they have the pieces? They have some of the pieces.
Right.
And I think this draft and or free agency, but this draft has some tackles. Just talking to coaches and personnel evaluators, GMs, that kind of thing around here, they think there are offensive linemen across the board in this draft who are plug-in ready. The tackle from Iowa, one coach told me that he would use tape of that kid to show young offensive linemen how to block.
Wow.
And he's a self-made guy, someone else told me. That, you know, Iowa might not always get, you know, the absolute bluest of blue chip recruits. So you go there, you have to earn your, you have to work, and you'd learn to work.
And it's a pro system with Kirk Ferentz, too.
And it is a pro with Ferentz, absolutely. And a lot of zone blocking and everything else. But there are technicians, and they like him a lot. The kid from Pittsburgh, who's actually a Teaneck, New Jersey.
The Clemens kid,
native. He comes in, a former defensive lineman. And sometimes you like the fact that he made a transition to the O-line. He understands the defensive line part of all of this, and that he's raw, but very skilled, and you could develop him. You know, how quickly do you need someone to play? Right. Giants fans would say we need them to play right away. Mm-hmm. And that's maybe a consideration at 9, second round, or wherever it may be. Certainly free agency, you would bring someone in to play right away.
And the Giants have been busy there doing some of the restricted free agency stuff. They announced Dallas Reynolds has re-signed. What other type of moves would you expect the Giants might decide to make before you get to the free agency period in the middle of March? You already mentioned JPP, the good chance he might get franchised.
Or signed.
Right.
You know,
I think
ideally you'd want to sign him to a deal clearly that works for both sides. I mean, no one wants to do a deal that's only going to work for one side. But it's
frankly, that's when you have OC holding out, hit training camp a few years in a row. That's what happens.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, you don't want to sign Jason Pierre-Paul or franchise him and pay $15-plus million against the cap.
Right.
Could you do it? Yes, they can do it.
Not an ideal
but
situation.
But it's not ideal. You know, you talk about, you know, would he sign? And I have no idea what he would sign. Would you sign, if you're him, a four-year deal? I don't know that you would, but would you sign a four-year deal with obviously more than $15 million guaranteed, a lot more than $15 million guaranteed, but that's more cap-friendly?
Right.
I don't know those things because I don't know what's in his mind or his agent's mind, or frankly, I don't know what's in the Giants' mind in terms of specifically what they would choose to do there. The last of the restricted guys, though, was signed in Reynolds. Am I correct about that?
I believe that's correct, yes.
So I think in terms of movement, it's going to be a lot of speculation. Could be guys that, you know, for some reason, like a Josh McCown is making visits. You know, that would not be something you would hook with the Giants,
you
obviously.
Think, no. They're pretty comfortable with Ryan Nassib as the backup.
Yeah, but my sense would be that until free agency, it's going to be Jason Pierre-Paul, Antrell Roll. Now, Roll I could see more than Jason Pierre-Paul hitting the market, seeing what's out there,
right,
and saying to himself, I want to see where the Giants are in terms of matching an offer. You know, sometimes pride gets in the way, but I think with Roll there would at least be that chance. But would you love to just sign them both up, at reasonable salaries that everyone's happy before a free agency hits? Of course you would. But life's not perfect.
No.
I hate to drop that breaking news on you, but life is not perfect.
Kim, this was a perfect interview, though.
No.
I appreciate
it wasn't.
Thank you so much.
It really wasn't perfect. But it was fun.
It was a lot of fun.
And the doors didn't open, so there was no cold air coming in.
See? You know the right people. You got to, you know, just make sure for the next half an hour that you keep the door closed for me.
You got
right?
it. Absolutely.
Kim, thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you, John.
Enjoy
so
the
much.
Rest of the weekend,
did
all right?
Did people call you John or Schmelke on here? I didn't go Schmelke because I thought it was too conversational.
No, that's fine. I've actually had callers go with the John, which is very kind of awkward
John.
And uncomfortable for me.
It's a little much.
Yeah, I think so.
John.
Yeah, it's all weird. Johnny Boy, I get that sometimes.
Johnny Boy, yeah. I like it.
Thank you,
all right,
Kim.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. That's Kim Jones from the NFL Network. She does a great job covering the Giants for a long time and, of course, did a good job covering the Yankees as well. I want to ask some Yankee questions, but I resisted successfully. We'll go back to the calls at 201-939-4513. You want to get in here, we can take some calls on the Giants and on the draft and on the combine, whatever you want to talk about, 201-939-4513. All right. Guys, the combine has been interesting. We're going to have workouts starting in just a couple of days, or just a couple hours, excuse me. And then it'll go on for the next 3 or 4 days. You have the offensive linemen and tight ends going today and tomorrow. Saturday, you will have the quarterbacks, wide receivers, and running backs. You got the defensive linemen and linebackers on Sunday. And then on Monday, you will have the cornerbacks and the safeties as we move forward here on at the Combine in Indianapolis. 201-939-4513. Let's go back to the phones. We'll be joined by Tom Rock from Newsday in just a few minutes. But for now, it's Big in New Jersey. Big, you're on the air with John Schmelk live in Indianapolis. What's going on, Big?
Hey, what's going on, Johnny boy?
Doing well, Big. What's going
on? Listen, I gotta ask you one question. How fun is it down in Indianapolis? How's the atmosphere?
You know, the atmosphere is cool, Big, and it's cool because at the Marriott downtown, you walk around, and it is a who's who of the National Football League. You see every coach, every general manager, scouts, and just everybody's just like one big NFL family. They chat, they talk, they stop. It's a relaxed atmosphere. And in that way, it's a lot of fun to be here. It's one of the few times that everybody that's everyone in the NFL gets together and is in one place trying to do the same thing. This is one of them. And for that reason, it's a ton of fun.
Yeah, it sounds awesome, man. But I just got to ask one question.
Yeah.
If you, let's just say Brandon Scherff is on the board and Danny Shelton is on the board.
You put me on the spot.
Who would you choose at that for the ninth pick if those two are on the board?
That's a great question, and you're putting me on the spot, and my canned answer is that I don't know yet. I need to see more information. I want to see the combine workers. I want to see the pro day. But if I had to choose between the big defensive tackle to stop the run or the big offensive lineman to run the ball better, right now I think I would probably take Scherff if I had to choose between the two. But I think both would be excellent, excellent picks. And I reserve the right to change my mind moving forward.
Yeah, the two big needs, because, I mean, what were like 30-something in rushing, or and our run defense was just awful, and then our rush offense was just atrocious. So both of them will be a big need. But I got to ask you just one more question. When does the offensive linemen for their weightlifting, and when do those come out? Like when are we going to know, like? I want to get the numbers on what they bench press and all that. When do they start to do that? I thought they like did that on Wednesday or something.
No, you know what?
They didn't do that yet.
None of the events have started. All we've had so far is some of the tests and the interviews and the measurements. The first bench press for the offensive lineman
Friday
will take place today at like 2 p.m.
Oh, okay, all right. Because I feel like that dude Donovan Smith. People are talking about like Clemens. Clemens looked like he wasn't ready to be a tackle at the Senior Bowl. Like, I'm telling you, this dude Donovan Smith from Penn State, man, you got to get – if you get his numbers and measurements, I'm telling you, he blocked every defensive end at the Senior Bowl. I'm telling you, remember that name, Donovan Smith. I think he's going to be better than all the tackles at the in this year's draft, man, from Penn State, man. He totally dominated everybody, man.
Big, seriously. No problem. I will
keep
my
eye. That's all I had today, John.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate the call. 201-939-4513. Hashtag NYG Combine on Twitter as we move forward here. Let's see what we got on Twitter as we take some questions. This one from Thomas Canny. I'm hoping we invest in the O-line in round one with Scherff if we can. What pass rushers could reset for Spags in round number two? Well, Tom, here's the trick. First of all, there's no guarantee that Brandon Scherff's going to get there. As Rob Rang has in his early mock draft, he has him off the board of 5 to the Redskins. And I think the only other guy you would maybe consider at number 9 is Lael Collins, who you would convert over from tackle. He's a guy that projects either as a right tackle or a guard, and he's a good power run blocker. And I think that's the type of guy that you want to – he's got a mean streak. He's the type of guy you want to bring in. Beyond that, I don't think there's an offensive lineman I would take at number 9 right now. And, again, it's still early. I reserve the right to change my mind. Pass rushers in that early second round. Now, it is a deep draft, so there are going to be guys that you can get there in the second round. The problem is that not a lot of them are necessarily going to be guys that are perfect fits to play defensive end in the 4-3. You have the senior out of USC, 6'4", 266. I'm going to butcher the last name. Odoziwa. I'm going to try to get a pronunciation on that. It's extremely difficult to say. A couple other guys, Daniel Hunter out of LSU, is 6'6", 240. He's probably a little small to play the 4-3 defensive end spot, and he didn't have a lot of good production in college. Mario Edwards, 6'3", 290. He's the big guy you can get in the second round, but not a great pass rusher necessarily. So there aren't a lot of great pass rushers you can get around, too, because pass rushers is such a valuable position in the NFL. It's really hard to find those type of players in round number two moving forward because – they're gone early because people understand how valuable pass rushers are. So when you look at it, pass rushers in round two is going to be difficult. I think there's a better chance, and maybe this will eventually be the calculation when they figure this stuff out. There's a much better chance of getting an offensive lineman, I think, in that early second round that you can plug and play than there is getting a pass rusher that you can plug and play, or a defensive lineman even. So maybe you get that defensive lineman and pass rusher at 9, then you grab the offensive lineman in the second round. That might be the way to go. And I'll also stress, I don't think you can get to the draft and say, well, we didn't do anything on the offensive line in free agency. We're going to throw all our eggs in one basket and, you know, make sure we get one in the draft. Because I think that's when you get into trouble, you force things, and you wind up having some issues. So I think that's a dangerous thing, too. I think you should work in free agency and try to figure that out. 201-939-4513. Let's go back to the phone and say what's up to Raphael in Pennsylvania. Raphael, what's going on, buddy? I'm sorry, Raphael. Go ahead again. My bad.
So how you doing, John?
I'm doing great, Raph. How are you?
Good, good. I was just calling this for the fact that I think one of the positions that aren't really that great in free agency that I think the Giants need to try to attack would be linebacker, not only for a starting linebacker, but for depth. because I don't know if they're going to re-sign Jaquan Williams or Paisinger. I think that's one position to look at. I do like Bruce Carter, though, from Cowboys.
And, you know, Bruce Carter, and he's one of those athletic outside linebackers that can certainly help in coverage. He's been very inconsistent with Dallas, I got to be honest with you, and I wouldn't throw the bank at him, but I think he's a player that could come in and help, especially in passing situations.
Okay, and I think, like, center or guards is pretty good, and tackles you can maybe get a good one in the free agency, but I do agree with you. I see your show all the time. I do agree with you with the whole fact that you're better off signing one, you know, a rookie contract, and then trying to keep them for the remainder of the should they retire.
Right.
But I also think that we do need help on the defensive line too, at defensive tackle. Although you do want to give Jay Bromley a chance, but I know most of those people who are big, they usually come out within the 40 snaps. So they usually get like 40 snaps a game. So you definitely need another one there. But
hey, look, and Rafael, the way the league works now, you have to rotate defensive linemen. You need like 6 or 7 guys to play every game on that D line.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think it would be good. I think there is some defensive tackles, though, that you might be able to get in free agency as well that could help the Giants with rotation. But I was just trying to ask you, what do you think really is the biggest need? I know safety is a big need and all that, and I know a lot of people say Landon Collins is probably, like, the best one that people drop. But I like Curtis Drummond and the guy from Ole Miss, too. I don't know if you know who that is, the safety from Ole Miss.
Well, Rafael, you know what? I talked to guys here about the safety class, and Landon Collins is the only first-round guy, whether he's, you know, top 15 or top 20. I think that remains to be seen. I think his agility drills at the combine will actually go a long way towards determining where he goes. And then I'm told another safety is not getting taken until the late second round, early third. So it's a very, very thin safety class. Thanks for the call, bud.
A question. Do you not think that there isn't a starter, or at least somebody who's better than the two people that we have on contract currently?
I don't think after Landon Collins there's a plug-and-play safety in this draft. There's a guy that you can train to get there, but I wouldn't count on somebody you draft that's not Landon Collins right now in this draft that you can plug in, play at safety on day one.
Okay. All right, Johnny, have a good one.
Thanks, Rafi. Appreciate it, man. 201-939-4513. That's the phone number, and we'll get back to your calls in just a second. But first, we welcome in our third and final guest of the show, and that is Tom Rock from Newsday. Tommy boy, how are you, my man? I got to get your microphone turned on. There we go.
Hi, John.
How are you doing, Tom? I'm doing great.
I'm doing great now that I can be heard.
Yeah. Well, we all want to hear you. That's why you're here. And we heard from Tom Coughlin earlier today. He was asked about a potential contract extension. He didn't say a whole lot, but things can be inferred from it. What did Tom Rock infer?
It certainly seems like he's going to get another one-year extension, and that's probably what's going to happen. It sounds like it's pretty imminent that the wheels are in motion, so to speak, and that he's gonna wind up not bucking that long-standing team philosophy of having a head coach not coach into his final year of his contract that the Giants have had for way back when, probably since 1925, I would think.
And funny enough, it seemed like, based on what John Mara said after the season, that there was a chance that might not actually continue.
You know, I think that was
you
just,
weren't buying it. Huh?
I wasn't buying that at all. Because, you know, it was a fun thing to write, certainly, and it was accurate that he said it, and maybe he was considering it a little bit. I just think coming off of a season like the last two seasons, coming off of those seasons, wasn't the time to say yes, he's our guy, and we're going to throw another year on his contract. You know, you have to take a little time, and that may have been a little bit of a public relations maneuver just to kind of distance these talks from the 2014 season, from the 2013 season, and put it in a different conversation as we come to this point in the NFL calendar and start to look forward to 2015.
One other thing I thought Tom said that was pretty clear and unequivocal was that the Giants have no intention of JPP not being a member of this team next year.
Yeah, however they figure it out, you know, they want him to basically be a Giant for the rest of his life and retire as a Giant. I mean, you know, Tom Coughlin may have even offered him a spot on the coaching staff when he stopped playing, the way he was talking about keeping this guy around for so long. Obviously, there's going to be a mechanism to do that, and the franchise tag is certainly on the table, and that's going to be the deadline for that is going to be next Friday, so we're going to be watching that. You know, the Giants have a long history, like the lame duck coach policy. They usually don't use the franchise tag for much more than a bridge just to get to a long-term deal. We saw that with Brandon Jacobs. We saw that with Steve Weatherford. So I suspect that given the Giants' desire to keep Jason Pierre-Paul and and knowing what that entails financially, and given Pierre Paul's comments at the end of the season that he would like to remain with the Giants, I'm sure they'll reach a middle ground either before or after this franchise tag ends. But I would say by the time that the free agency and the season come around, he's not going to be on the hook for a 1 year, $15 million contract.
Well, and I guess that gives more motivation to get a long-term deal done, right? Because the longer he's on that tag, that money has to be allocated, and then all of a sudden free agents are signing places.
Yes, it counts before, you know, they haven't spent it, but it counts. And so now you got to figure out what you're going to do. And of course, we didn't ask Tom about this, but this is more of a Jerry question for Saturday morning.
And he'll talk Saturday,
about
right?
Eli Manning's contract and where we stand with that and what kind of extension might be in store for him.
And that's something I'm sure the Giants and him will talk about. Usually, it seems like negotiations with Eli usually aren't the most cantankerous and tough to deal with.
No, they're usually pretty good, and his agent, Tom Condon, usually has a pretty good relationship with the Giants. And I remember the last time we did this extension, I think, was during training camp, and it got done in a matter of a couple of days and hammered out pretty quickly. So the key to this one, I think, is going to be how long do the Giants want to commit to Eli, and how much longer do they think he can be a quarterback who's of the caliber that can lead the team to a championship.
What's your opinion based on what you've seen from those type of elite quarterbacks in the National Football League? Can you count on them to age 38? Can you count on them to age 40? Heck, look at Tom Brady.
Age 40, that's tough. You know, I mean, he certainly is not has not shown any wear or tear.
Certainly not.
From the physical beating that he's taken over the first 10 years of his career.
Which is funny, by the way, because neither did his brother, and then all of a sudden,
well, I was going to say,
it just happened.
I had a car like that. That all of a sudden got, you know, I was really happy with it, and nothing ever happened to it, and all of a sudden one thing went and another, and it starts to fall apart. You got to get rid of it. So, you know, sometimes quarterbacks are like that, people are like that. It's certainly hard to tell, and you never know. You know, one bad hit in this league and that's the end of it for a lot of guys. You know, all of a sudden they come back from knee injuries and things like that, but you start landing on your shoulder wrong and your throwing shoulder or your elbow or something like that, and it gets a lot trickier to start to come back and to start to recover from those injuries in your mid-30s.
Or Eli could be Tom Brady and look like himself till age 40.
He
who the heck
Tom
knows?
Brady. He could be Eli Manning and play till he's 45. You know, maybe Tom Coughlin sticks around that long, too. Who
I'll
knows?
Tell you what, I think Tom would like to be honest with you, the way he talks about it.
Yeah.
One guy that might be a little bit more interesting to keep an eye on is Onchor Role, and we talked to Kim Jones about this a few minutes ago. What do you think, and I'll attack it from this angle, what do you think the outside market is going to be for Onchor Role if he does, in fact, get to free agency? He's on the other side of 30, which a lot of times will deter teams from offering big-time contracts, but at the same time, it's a weak safety draft. Free agency, there aren't a ton of safeties that are out there beyond Devin McCourty that are top-notch players. Onchor is one of the best safeties out there. What do you think the free agent market is going to be for a guy like Onchor Role?
You know, Onchor Role's best attribute for the Giant in terms of the Giants re-signing him is his intangibles. It's his leadership. It's the C on his chest. It's the way he deals with the younger players, the example he sets, practicing every day, showing up for every game. So I'm not so sure how that translates to other teams who don't see that all the time.
And don't know the player personally.
And don't know the player personally. And, you know, I know in Arizona he didn't have that kind of a role. You know, he as far as being outspoken and with the media, so he goes to another market, and it's not the New York media where, you know, we go to his locker every day and he sort of holds court and espouses on every angle of the team. You know, I don't know that plays in other markets or how that plays in other markets. You know, we look at Justin Tuck. I mean, you know, I didn't hear a
peep
memorable
out of him.
Quote
no.
from him all year, and he was, you know, he was practically the spokesman for the Giants for 4 or 5 years. So, how that plays in, I'm not sure. And then, but you also look at it, and Justin Tuck's a great example that the Giants just don't pay for intangibles. That, you know, they usually don't anyway.
Especially not intangibles that are over the age of 30.
Yes. Yeah. No, they're more likely to cut early than to let these players dangle on for a couple of more years. So I think it'll be interesting. I think he'll go with a free agency. I think I think they're going to be a little far apart, the Giants and Antrell, when the calendar year begins in March. And then, you know, he'll be out there, and he'll probably get a few sniffs from teams and see what happens from there. But my sense is that eventually he'll come back to the Giants.
How do you think the Giants view the linebacker position? We know they like Devon Kennard as a long-term answer there. You have Jameel McClain, a veteran. John Beeson has battled injuries his entire career. You got, you know, young veterans like Spencer Paysinger, like Mark Herzlick.
Free agents. How do you
think the Giants view this linebacker position now? What do you think their strategy will be moving forward?
I think it's going to start to rotate a little bit this year and start to focus more on Kennard. I think they're going to try to, you know, they didn't quite, they thought they knew what they had in Kennard, but he had to show it first.
Sure.
Last year. And now this year they kind of know that Kennard could be the man. Kennard could be the linchpin to that whole defense between the front and the back and side to side. They can build a defense. He's the kind of player that you could build a defense around. And Steve Spagnuolo, with his background with linebackers from Philadelphia, he can certainly see what kind of benefits Kennard can bring. And we saw him blitzing more at the end of this season, and that really opened up a lot of eyes. And he certainly made a lot of quarterback hits. So I think that it's going to be a bit of a transition year, a bit of a changing of the guard. From that Beeson McClain linebacker room to let's start to build around Devon Kennard a little bit and scheme around him a little bit and really bring out whatever virtues he has on the field and put an exclamation mark on what he can do.
Two players rehabbing, trying to come back from pretty serious injuries. Victor Cruz, a wide receiver. Jeff Schwartz on the offensive line. How do you think the Giants are approaching those two situations moving forward? How much expectations do they have that those guys will be able to be themselves and give them significant playing time this year?
Right. Well, there's hope and then there's reality. And you know, obviously everybody hopes that they'll be back and you know, be back to themselves too,
right.
which is important. But the reality is that they're both very serious injuries, and we saw with Beeson how his toe and foot problems lingered for a long time, and so we'll have to keep an eye on Schwartz with that. And as far as Cruz goes, you know, Jerry at the end of the year said, you know, he kind of made a comparison to David Wilson last year, where they're counting on him to come back. Hoping he'll come back, rather, but not really counting on him and sort of making preparations just in case he can't. So, you know, it's an interesting situation. You know, Tom said that Victor's rehab is coming along well and that he's making progress, but it's a very slow, tedious rehab from that injury, which we knew coming into the process. And it's going to be interesting to see how he is able to translate his new physical limitations, if there are any, onto the field, and of course how all that relates to Odell Beckham Jr. and Reuben Randle and whoever
and the draft perhaps
and
who
the
knows?
Draft pick sure because there's always a lot of good yeah. wide receivers in the draft and so you know maybe if you know the kid from Missouri drops a little bit, and all of a sudden he's there. You know they took a shot on Mario Manningham with some red flags. Maybe in the third or fourth round.
He's a big kid too, so I'm walking around.
And his name is Beckham also.
Yeah. Can't go wrong, right?
Yeah, all right, Beckham's the better.
Tom, very quickly, 20 seconds before we say goodbye. Giants picking 9. You've heard about where the talent is in this draft and everything. Where do you think value is going to fit need at that 9 spot? Is it likely going to be up front, either offensive line, defensive line? Do you think the Giants will throw a curveball and go elsewhere?
Yeah, I think it's going to be on the line. I think that's going to be the key for them this year. They're still in the process of rebuilding that offensive line. And if you look at the Cowboys' blueprint, so to speak, of picking high, and being disciplined, I think offensive line is the place to go. And I think you could probably get the best offensive lineman in this draft right around 9 because it's not a very top-heavy draft for that position.
Tom, great stuff as always, my
John,
friend.
Good
great to see
you in Indianapolis.
Enjoy the -6 degree weather for the next few days.
Yes.
Appreciate it. That's Tom Rock from Newsday. Does a great job covering the Giants for Newsday. We'll be hearing from his buddy Bob Glauber. He'll be joining us on Saturday after Jerry Reese speaks at the podium. So make sure you check that out on Giants.com. We got a few minutes to go in the show, everybody. We can take a couple more tweets at hashtag NYG Combine, and we can also take your calls at 201-939-4513. 4513. And this is really when it starts to pick up and get excited here at the Combine. The workouts are going to start. They move the wide receiver, quarterbacks, and running backs to Saturday to get the rating. That's what people are watching on the NFL Network, watching on ESPN. So this is when the guys start to go. You hear a lot about Jameis Winston. You'll hear a lot about Mariota. And we'll see who might be on the board when the Giants pick at 9. Because we can keep throwing out names, folks. We want this guy. We want that guy. You don't know who's going to be there. I mean, you got three guys you love, and then all of a sudden you blink, and they're all off the board, 5-8, and you're sitting there, and you're like, oh, boy, now what do we do? So that's why you have to do the work and really set up your board and know what you're going to do based on who's there when the Giants pick at 9. I want to go through some tweets here in the final few minutes of the show before we say goodbye. We'll try to squeeze in a call if you want to give us a buzz at 201-939-4513. Marcelo Moretti, what about Shaq Thompson? Any interest by the Giants? Well, Marcelo, once again, these teams haven't even met yet to talk about prospects, so let's not talk about interest by teams because I don't think we know about that yet. But in terms of Shaq Thompson, he's an interesting player. He's a 220, 225-pound linebacker, which in the NFL, not sure you can play that position. Mike Mayock projects him as a safety for that very reason. He played middle linebacker in Washington. At worst, or at best, I should say, in the NFL, he's probably going to be a weak side will linebacker because of his size. So I think those are the things you determine when you look at Shaq Thompson. I think he's an excellent football player. I think he's a playmaker. The question is, where does he fit at the NFL level? And I think his workout and his measurements on Saturday and Sunday here at the Combine will go a long way towards trying to figure that out. David Goodman, worried about Landon Collins, a safety, and we talked about Landon Collins with a couple of our draft experts. He's a guy that's going to go in the first round, but there are some questions about his coverage skills, and we'll keep an eye on his 40-yard dash time here at the Combine on Sunday. I'm sorry, they go on Monday, and then we'll take a look at his shuttle times as well to see Landon Collins and his athleticism and exactly where he might be able to fit in the National Football League. And, you know, there haven't been a ton of safeties going in the first round in recent years. You know, you see the Seahawks with, you know, Cam Chancellor and Earl Thomas, and those guys can certainly be big playmakers. But, you know, a lot of times safeties, you got to make sure you get the right guy, because if you don't, he could have issues at the NFL level. 201-939-4513. We'll be with you at the Combine tomorrow, same time, 1 to 2 p.m. Anita Marks and I will host from Indianapolis at the Combine. We'll be joined by Rob Vacchiano from the Daily News. We'll have Matt Miller, the draft expert from Bleacher Report. He will join us as well, and we'll have continuing coverage later on today. You'll see a one-on-one I just did with head coach Tom Coughlin when he got off the podium. And what I talked to Tom about is mostly the process of the Combine and what they learn about the draft prospects and how they go about getting that information. So I think it was some very good insight about how Coach Coughlin goes about his business here at the Combine. We'll be talking to Giants scouts. You'll see those go up on the website over the next couple of days. We'll have a number of other draft experts. I talked to Rich Gannon, former Oakland Raider quarterback. So a lot of stuff going on as we move forward at the Combine in Indianapolis. Everybody, thank you for joining us. A great show. Thanks to our crew here in Indy. Thanks to the guys back in the shop handling the calls. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow, 1 o'clock, when Big Blue Kickoff returns from Indy at the NFL Combine. Have a good one, everybody.